Okay, so I spent so much time praying for writing down the axioms of the vertical path on algebra last time. So I will have to repeat this again. So this is a gadget, sort of a quadruple, consisting of vector space D. It's endomorphic in T, and a bunch of operations that naturally split into two groups, one consisting of operation minus one, and another is infinite, like that, where, as I said, T is an endomorphism, and all operations are sort of multiplications. And this should satisfy the following axiom first. Excuse me. So the triple like this is a commutative associative algebra with derivation T. Second has to do with the bunch of these operations. So we consider triple and this is a what they call vertexly algebra. What this means more precisely is as follows. First of all, we will demand that multiplication satisfy the nilpotency condition. And then we will have the vertex analogs of Q commutativity and Q, well, anti-commutativity and the Jacobi identity. So this Q commutativity says that, well, you can almost flip-flop the two things. Well, there is an overall sign, so you almost flip-flop them, except that a bunch of infinitely many terms appears. One and two factorial T squared of Bn plus 2, etc. Then the Jacobi. Excuse me. So we'll get binomial coefficient. So to finish the sub-definition of the vertex of the algebra, I have to explain what role is played by T. It was a derivation in the usual case of commutative associative algebra. And it is sort of the same in this case, although things become more involved. So if you apply T to odd element and consider the corresponding nth operation, then it's the same as a bracket, if you will. An is an endomorphic of the capital, so you see, for all of this makes sense. And these two non-trivial conditions are required to hold. And the last group of axioms, parallel to that in the case of the usual Poisson algebra, that says something as to how the associative commutative algebra structure is agrees with the vertex Lie algebra structure. And that's easy. It simply says that for any element of my vertex Poisson algebra, the operator of multiplication by of the nth multiplication by an is a derivation of this usual multiplication. Well, I tried to make the case last time that although unpleasant, these axioms arise absolutely naturally and actually are unavoidable ones. See, if you think about a Poisson algebra as the algebra of functions on a Poisson manifold, then if you replace your manifold, usually in finite dimensional, with the manifold of infinite jets, then you more or less have no choice and this sort of axioms are forced upon us. Well, today I will forget about the justification and consider these particular axioms in earnest. So I would like to derive consequences of them. So what's the problem we have dealing with such gadgets? Well, there's too much stuff, and so we would like to tackle them piece by piece. Let's see what can be said. First of all, there are too many operations. Well, minus one is sort of usual multiplication. It plays the same role and satisfies literally usual axioms of associative commutative algebra. So that's fine. Let's turn to operation zero. Well, the slogan here is that it comes closest to making... So that's like associative commutative. And this couple is almost a Lie algebra, so this operation makes this couple come closest to making it into a Lie algebra. Indeed. So, specialize the Jacobi identity, vertex Jacobi identity, to operate, set m equal to zero. You will get immediately that the zeroth multiplication is a derivation of all products. The Jacobi identity will then read like this. So, what it says is exactly that the for any a, a zero is a derivation of all multiplications number n. Furthermore, setting this identity n equal to zero, and you will get so that's the statement that binomial coefficients will vanish if n is zero, except that when f equals zero. Now let n be zero, then this reads as follows. Escaped. The only term. That's what I mentioned right now. If m is zero, you can't make s greater than zero. Yes, and m in this case is zero, so s cannot be greater than zero. Yes. But that is misleading. For example, in the vertex algebra structure, it is important to consider M negative. But in this particular case, of course, you're right. But that's important that binomial coefficients make sense when one of the parameters is an arbitrary complex number. That's why people always write it like this. Now, back to this further specialization of this identity. You get this. And if you give this thing a thought, you will realize that this is indeed almost like, think of this pair as, think of this as the bracket operation. And this becomes the Jacobi identity. Right? That will be A, B, C minus B, A, C equals A, B, C. So one can rush then to the conclusion that this is a Lie algebra. That's wrong. You see why? That's wrong because even though Jacobi in this particular form holds, the anti-commutativity fails. For indeed, if we now invoke this commutativity, you will see that that's not quite so. And there is a bunch of terms like this. So, and that's the reason I said it comes closest to making this into a Lie algebra. It doesn't make it into a Lie algebra because of this. So one lemma that we almost proved is then if you quotient out this derivation, then the zeroth operation descends onto the quotient and makes it into a Lie algebra. The reason zeroth operation descends onto the quotient is a consequence of these identities. This is something I will use more than once if you multiply through zero an element in the image of T, then what is it, 3.3 says is that this equals this. So in other words, A not commutes with T and having this sense to the quotient. I will be using this more than once today. There are some other constructions which I will perhaps not need today, but I will mention them at this point for the sake of completeness. So what else can be done? Let us explore the operation number zero in more detail. Pick a V and V naught is a mapping like that. Consider the kernel of V naught. Simple exercise. Yes. Okay. Yes, it is. A one element subset. A simple exercise is that kernel of V naught is a vertex Poisson subalgebra. This follows from the fact that zero is a derivation of all the products, and therefore the products will descend to the kernel. And because of this, T can be chosen to be the same. Once you are given a vertex Poisson algebra, and it's an algebra defined to be the kernel of V naught, so that's what physicists called a W algebra. So if you will, that's the definition of a W algebra. W algebra is a vertex Poisson algebra such that it equals to the kernel of V naught in some other vertex Poisson algebra. Such is the slang here. And the last remark of this type. Suppose in addition, that's just the terminology. If your vertex Poisson algebra is defined to be the kernel of some V naught or some ambient Poisson algebra, then this is called a W algebra. The logic is that this ambient V is sort of simple, but the kernel can give you something complicated. And I will finish this review of generalities by saying that assume now that V naught squared is zero as an operator acting on the capital. That's very unlikely in the setting I'm describing, but you see, that's the usual mathematics, but there is also super mathematics, and I could have easily changed all the axioms, adjusting them to the case when V is a super manifold, and then all the axioms can be generalized by inserting plus or minus sign there, and then this condition is more likely to hold, because if V is odd, then V naught squared is the bracket of V naught with itself. Be it as it may, suppose this is zero, meaning that the image of V naught is a subspace of the kernel of V naught. This, we agreed, is a vertex Poisson algebra. Then you can show, again, manipulating the axioms in the way I did, that this is an ideal. And I leave it for those interested to cook up the right definition of an ideal of a vertex Poisson algebra. But then, you see, if this holds true, you can consider cohomology of the space with respect to this regarded as a differential, which simply means taking kernel and dividing out by the image. If you quotient vertex an algebra by an ideal, you get another algebra. So this is also a vertex Poisson algebra. This is also an example of a ubiquitous construction in this science. Now let me stop at this point and move on closer to the actual topic of my talk, which was, as you remember, to give you on the one hand a classification of a certain class of vertex Poisson algebras and also explain that current bracket actually has this chiral nature. So again, our problem is that there is too much stuff. We would like to cut it to make our life simpler. Let me introduce a grading, oftentimes called conformal. What this means is that I will assume that V is a direct sum subspaces like this, and this agrees with my operations as follows. This is not really a restrictive assumption, although those who see it for the first time, this may look very unnatural. Really, the reason of it is that, so I told you that this is all, this has to do with the jets. And suppose your domain, world sheet, if you wish, is a circle. Then there is a vector field of rotation, and that grades things. And once the vertex algebra structure is naturally associated to mappings of the circle anywhere, then the corresponding gradation would automatically satisfy these conditions. Frankly, I've never seen any example of vertex algebra where there is no gradation like that. So this is not restrictive. To help you come to grips with all of this, let me show you some of the examples. So, for example, multiplication minus 1 of denote by anything, so preserves the conformal gradation. And that's fine. So that means that the whole thing is graded with sort of, I will discuss it in greater detail, but at least as a denote module, it is graded. Of a particular importance for me will be the operation 0 restricted to V1, and then the obvious count will show you that V1 is preserved under 0. So, my plan today will be as follows. It's hard to handle all those axioms for the entire thing, but I would like to study the consequences of axioms restricted to only first two subspaces. I will make it clear what restricted means. Some of the operations won't be defined, some will be only partially defined. And the main result I would like to prove is as follows. So, as an attempt not to get bogged down in details, I will formulate the main result right away, but I will pay the price. I'll give you a sloppy formulation. The details will appear. So, the so-called theorem. So, for a generic, and I will explain later on what genericity means, for a generic vertex Poisson algebra like this, there are natural isomorphisms, or if you will, identifications. V naught may be identified. Let me stick for simplicity to the smooth setting. So with functions on a disk, V1 is identified with this now famous space of sections. Now, I wanted to talk about a bundle, a tangent and cotangent bundle, but I need sections. And in my exposition, whenever a bundle is replaced with the shape of its sections, I will make those curly letters. So, V1 is a direct sum of the sections of the tangent and cotangent bundle. and the operation number 0. Is a current, rather it will appear as its twin Dortmund rocket. And in fact, this passage from V to, you see, we have infinitely many operations, so it seems that I'm picking only a tiny portion of the data given to me. But in fact, this one out of infinitely many operations, in a sense, determines the whole thing. So, in fact, a vertex Poisson algebra structure on subspace generated by these two I mean, the whole thing is maybe sort of out of control. We need to know what happens there, there, and there. But suppose we know that the whole subalgebra, the whole algebra is generated by these two. Then the vertex structure there is determined. By the Dortmund rocket on the space. Okay, so that's the plan, and now let us start making good on my promise to explain this. Yes, this has...
Knowing those higher
energy. No. Well, yes, of course. No, by the whole thing. Consider, okay, if you have an algebra, whatever it may be, consider its subspace, just linear subspace. Consider now the smallest subspace containing this one enclosed under all multiplications. That's the vertex subalgebra generated by the subspace. So, everything here is non-trivial. Yes. 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 But that's true. Locally, and in the infinity situation, that's true. They are all isomorphic. But that's important that they are sort of different, although isomorphic, because when you start gluing things, you will get some... Yes. Local and somewhat sloppy. Mm-hmm. Oh, if I know, yes. I mean, it can be explicitly written. It's not a question of interpretation. It's really a question of your familiarity with all of this. So if you know that things living in B0 and B1 generate everything, then you immediately write down what V2 is. There is no problem with that. Okay. the statement is somewhat more interesting in the analytic situation, especially in algebraic situation when even locally there is no local, there is no isomorphism. Okay, so how do we get all of this? Well, just as I promised, we'll be making one step at a time. So first of all, the whole thing, forget about generation condition. So the whole thing is a associative commutative algebra with respect to multiplication number minus one. It is convenient to further simplify this by focusing on this pair. I think I mentioned that we are not as close under this multiplication, so this is also an associative commutative algebra. Then there is this mapping. Which makes also, that's a consequence of the first one. Now this mapping makes B1 into a B0 module. By the way, to make it somewhat simplify the notation and burden the notation, I will. So that's, you know, a ring, and as such, I will call it A. And so B1 then is an A module. To finish with the exploration of operation number minus one. Then there is a T, and I think I forgot to mention it. Have I erased it? There is a requirement. This differentiation changes the conformal weight by one. And again, it is not restrictive. It is always the case. So in particular, to finish with the consideration of operation minus one. So that's what we are doing. We are considering operation minus one. T maps V0 to V1. A to V1. And that's a derivation. So T is a derivation of all products. I'm also taking the liberty of sometimes denoting the product number minus one by this more common notation, by a dot. And know that here I use the commutativity of minus one. That's a situation familiar to algebraic geometers, of course, because that's the way to define the module of differentials over a ring, and this is something I will be using later on. Of course, that's the reason why his star appears in this picture, but at the moment, we needn't bother with this geometric interpretation. So we can, therefore, inside B1, form a smaller submodule generated by the image of T. V is an A module, and this is an A submodule. So much about the operation number minus one. So my second step will be to consider the operation number 0. Operation number 0 appears, you see, I have only V0 and V1 to deal with, and operation number 0 appears here in two different ways, like this, or as I mentioned already, like this. But of course I mean that I take X of 0 with multiplication A, that belongs to A, provided X is an element of B1. Now this is true, follows from the definition of the gradient. This has already been discussed. So, focus first on this. We have a space with a multiplication of sorts. In principle, it's neither commutative nor anti-commutative nor associative, but it's an algebra. Lemma makes B1 into an algebra. Lemma says that the subspace of B1, of sort of subspace of differentials, is an ideal. Since this is an introductory talk, I will perhaps even sketch a proof. So it should be clear what that means. I have to show that, for example, B1, 0, A, A belongs to A, A. So let's compute. As I told you, all higher operations are derivations of the usual product. So the Leibniz rule holds, and so I have the count of dimension or gradation says, as we mentioned already, that this is an element of A. So the first term is where it belongs, where it should be. How about this one? Well, I told you that T commutes with the zeroth multiplication by any vector. So this is T of V0 A2, and we're done. Well, if we have an algebra and an ideal, then we, of course, would like to quotient it out. So now, from B1, it is the natural to pass over to B1 mod out ATA. And so this is an algebra. not necessarily associative or commutative, and actually more or less never associative or commutative. But what is true is the following. This pair. What do you think it is in view of what's still on the board? With what class of algebra does it identify? I told you, operation number zero comes closest to a Lie operation. And it is technically true that this is a Lie algebra. We almost proved the statement above, and perhaps actually proved. We explained if you take the whole thing and quotient out the image of T, then operation zero makes it into Lie algebra. This situation is different, but not much different. And so essentially the same argument will show that this is a Lie algebra. Now to this operation. Lemma. This product descends to and so makes A, let me, to simplify my notation, let me call this, since this is a Lie algebra, call it GA, makes it into GA, into a GA module, where GA operates by derivations. This is practically obvious now. The only thing to be proven really is that, I mean, the derivation thing is true because zero, the operation zero is a derivation of all multiplications. So if this thing makes sense, then it does act by derivation. So the only thing to show is that this ideal operates trivially on A. Let me leave this for you as an exercise. It's done along in the way similar to any of the above computations are carried out. So, let me summarize. So, rather reformulate what we just did. So, what the last statement really says is as follows. We have a couple, A, usual ring, associative, commutative. GA is a Lie algebra, and an A module, and GA operates on A by derivations. That's a familiar situation. Whenever you have things like that, you say that this pair is a Lie algebra. In the present situation, we have a little more. If I'm allowed to draw a picture. So we have at the level 0A, and below there have G of A, GA, and then this A, AA. So this is the algebra, right? And this is like formed, and I will in a second make an assumption that this be just the space of Keller differential. So this is classical, but we have this extra piece, and to indicate this, I will sometimes refer to a triple like that as an extended the algebra. So, what is it that we achieved? We started with a vertex algebra, and were able to interpret at least part, well, definitely part of vertex Poisson algebra operations with classical sort of things. And so, motivated by this, let me give you the following definition. So the idea is, having started with a vertex Poisson algebra, which was a little too much for us, cut off this infinite tail and focus on what we get on this portion. We're trying to apply a forgetful functor of sorts. So part of this data is classically known as an algebra, right? Hence the following definition. A vector space V0 plus V1 equipped with partially defined operations T minus 1, 0, 1. A moment's thought will show you that if this is extended to vertex Poisson algebra, then no other operations will be defined or non-zero on the sum. Defined and non-zero, perhaps non-zero on the sum. So, a vector space like this equipped with partially defined four operations like that is called a vertex Poisson algebra if there is a vertex Poisson algebra such that, well, you know what I'm going to say, such that the restriction of the structure on the whole thing to this part coincides with this. Restriction of structure to B0 plus B1 is our thing. In principle, were I more conscientious, I should have written explicitly all the axioms of a vertex Poisson algebra, picking from that gadget, although that gives something meaningful and non-trivial when restricted to the space, and then I would get some collection of axioms. But This is tiresome. Definition, I think, says it all. Such things aren't unusual. I will in a second explain what I meant by the a generic such vertex boson algebraic. But let me give you a couple of examples, which are sort of easier, and at least the first of them is much better known, perhaps much more important than anything I have to say about my situation. Well, if you look at that picture, we have a triple A, the algebra, and the space of sort of forms. Let me warp and sort of degenerate everything there as follows. Let A be C, and let B1 consist of a Lie algebra. And no one forms, of course. This is prescribed by this. So G is a Lie algebra. And then the only I will set all operations equal, well, what are non-trivial operations? Of course, the algebra over C, so that's just, this is obvious, right? That's just the scalar multiplication. And I will set all other equal to zero, except that, of course, this operation will be required to be equal to the bracket on G. This vertex boson algebra is pretty well known, of course, in a different guise. And it is, well, the statement is that it is a vertex boson algebra. And the corresponding vertex boson algebra is, of course, essentially the well-known loop algebra. So the corresponding vertex algebra V is like this. So the vector space, this is as follows. To explain how T is defined and how to continue this, I will proceed as follows. I will pick xi a basis of g, and then v will simply be the symmetric algebra, or rather just the space of polynomials in x's and sort of formal applications of operator T to X, T to the nth XI, and greater than 1, greater or equal to 1, and I runs from 1 to the dimension of G. Of course, in the more familiar notation, what I mean is that I identify xi with xi tensor 1, tn of xi with, now, the inverse, I should say, tn of xi with xi z to the n minus 1, perhaps with some coefficient and that gives you classical limit of the vacuum representation of the loop algebra. That's the loop parameter. I try to explain. That's in the standard notation. A priori not, but that's the xi is to be identified with the situation with xi tensor the inverse. And if you formally differentiate, you will be getting this. So this is to be taken with a grain of salt. That's the dictionary to translate from this point of view to the usual one. If you will hear is a more explicit explanation. Although this is rather, so you take the loop algebra. And whenever you have an element x, then xn is x times b to the nth. And what you can do with this loop algebra is to consider its vacuum module. And this is a representation induced from the trivial one, from LG plus to the entire LG, where LG plus is G times all polynomials. And if you think of what this looks like as a vector space, you will see that, well, it's induced from the trivial representation. The positive part acts by zero, and then you go by degree below there will be subspace of elements like this. Then you can apply products of such elements. You will be getting either G tensor Z to the second or the symmetric power of G tensor the inverse, etc. And that's something I wanted to describe here. If you do it in the terminology I adopted, then that's the answer. This is sloppy, and the reason is that the reason is visibly seen in the geometrical approach. I'm passing from right modules to right D modules to left D modules, but that doesn't matter now. So this is a famous situation, which from my current point of view is totally degenerated. What shall we do? You see, I'm now close to finish, really. Shall we make a break or what? Okay, I can. If people aren't exhausted. Thank you.